Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Well, Matt, I noticed something yesterday real quick. On Twitter, This Week in Bulls History has been a great segment for us, not only just to be able to reminisce and talk about games every Tuesday, but also to share videos and share the highlights of games on Twitter. And I've noticed yesterday that we may have unintentionally given Derrick Rose an internet funeral. It seems like just scrolling through all the comments and the quote tweets of the video in particular yesterday of Derrick Rose's performance against the Miami Heat brought out every Derrick Rose fan, every Chicago Bulls fan, and NBA fans in general. It's kind of reminiscing about that era.
It was really fantastic. I mean, the Bulls history videos are fun. I mean, I love sifting through YouTube to find highlights of old Bulls games, whether it's from the young Rose years or the Jordan dynasty years. And it's a fun way to interact with Bulls fans of various generations. And it's funny that, I mean, clearly Twitter is a young person's game, because when I tweet out those videos of some of those games from back in the Jordan years, there's some interaction. But it seems like most of the people that are on Twitter every day are people young enough that they don't even remember that. And that the young Derrick Rose and Joakim and Luol teams that were, you know, the scrappy underdogs going up against Miami and the team that was ready to take the league by storm is already remembered fondly as like that old Bulls team of the past. Which is crazy. I mean, 2011 doesn't seem like it was that long ago. I guess it was 7 years ago, but the amount of fan interaction from that Derrick Rose versus the Heat highlight reel that we put up yesterday, it's crazy. And especially considering, and this is something you and I have talked about on the show before, the kind of insane dichotomy of how Bulls fans feel about Derrick Rose and who Derrick Rose was at 21 and 22 before the ACL injury and the player he has become after the fact, and the fact that he was really dragged through the mud a lot in Chicago. Fans felt like he let them down, that, you know, the Bulls championship window evaporated with Derrick Rose, that they had a problem with a lot of the things he said to the media, whether it was like I don't want to be sore at my son's graduation, or I'm looking forward to free agency money and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's insane. There were a lot of people saying like, oh man, I can't wait for the Derrick Rose 30 for 30 to come out, because the guys had one of the most fascinating and tragic careers as far as professional athletes in this country. And I agree, they absolutely have to make it Derrick Rose 30 for 30, and I can't wait to watch it. But when you put up a video like that of Derrick Rose shining on the United Center floor in a primetime nationally televised matchup against LeBron and the Heat, all of the commentary was positive. You know, a lot of it was lamenting, oh man, what could have been, and I missed this, and watching this, you know, has me on the verge of tears because I missed this version of Derrick Rose so much. But it was all so positive, which is kind of ironic considering there was so much loud hate thrown at Derrick Rose in the years following that ACL injury as his career kind of started to fall off.
Yeah, they definitely got to make a part of that if they ever do make a 30 for 30 for Derrick Rose, which would be, like you said, absolutely fascinating. They obviously have to spend some time on Derrick Rose stands because it's crazy to me not only to think about the player that he could have been if the injuries never happened, but the type of fan base that he built, he could have built up, like on top of already the people that stand so loyal to him. And it's crazy because you tweet out anything, like if you tweet out a video or a comment or something, and you've got a relatively big, relatively sizable following. And even if you don't, it seems like Derrick Rose followers find those tweets and are able to come across it more easily. But like you said, I thought the common theme for it too was all positive notes. And it was cool to kind of read through people's memories of that game specifically and just that kind of era. A lot of personal stories on there too, just kind of like where people were when they remember watching these games. And I know, like, for me, one of my favorite games of all time, I can remember specifically where I was when Derrick hit that bank shot to win the game over Cleveland, or no, over Miami back in 2015. Or was that Cleveland? No, that was Miami. Back in 2015. And I just remember that game so vividly, and that'll be one of the biggest memories of watching the Bulls I'll ever have, is just because I remember that, and Derrick Rose was a part of that, and that was his big comeback. So I think not only to make it a connection to the fans, but also the connection around the NBA of people looking back at the highlights and all asking, like, what if, man, injuries suck. This is the worst thing that could happen to a player like this at his prime. But it was kind of cool. It was kind of one of those things that I didn't really expect it coming from these videos, and I didn't expect it from just one highlight, really. Of you can sit on YouTube and watch Derrick Rose old highlights all day, but the overwhelming positive reaction we got from this and the memories and the stories was really cool.
Yeah, and a lot of people saying, like, oh man, I was at that game when Dang buried that corner three for the win. And it's definitely, like I said, it's crazy that that's already a nostalgic piece of Bulls history. It is such a recent piece of Bulls history, but people were commenting on that video, as you said, kind of like an in memoriam of, oh man, that Bulls team that almost was, but never was and never will be. It is already like ingrained in Bulls fans as a, in some ways heartbreaking, but also looking back, overarchingly very fond memories of those teams. And I mean, that's how I feel about them. You're frustrated that team never really got the chance to make that next step and maybe make it to the finals and contend for a championship. But you still, when you go back and look at some of those games, especially those epic games against the Heat, it's you remember it fondly because those were just some really fun times.
All right. So before we get to mailbag, I want to talk quickly about what John Paxson had to say yesterday. Coming off the All-Star break, heading into games, tomorrow starts up NBA games again. Sort of trying to figure out what the Bulls are going to do with these last 25 games. And John Paxson made it pretty clear that it seems like Cristiano Felicio, Cameron Payne, and some of these other guys, David Nwaba, some of these other guys are going to get a lot of run. And it seems like he described it in a way where he was calling it block games. So basically a stretch of four or five games where a lot of these young guys are going to get significant starting minutes. And he went as far as to say is that when the Bulls come back, Jerian Grant's out of the rotation, Robin Lopez, you're going to see his minutes decrease. Some of these other guys and veterans that I didn't really think the Bulls were going to pull that trigger, especially with Fred Hoiberg. I didn't know how Fred Hoiberg maybe would have felt about doing this. And it goes along the line of kind of getting the front office dipping their hands in a place where they kind of want it to be molded and constructed the way they built this team at the beginning of the year. So what were your initial thoughts? Like, obviously it's not too surprising, but I feel like the surprising factor is just coming out and saying that, yeah, we're going to stick these guys in the starting lineup. And this is basically how it's going to be run for the last 25 games. And the fact that the veterans have to now take a back seat to all of this. Were you surprised at all about this? And what do you expect from this?
I guess I might say I was a little bit surprised at the essentially the transparency of John Paxson when he spoke to the media at their practice yesterday, saying, here's the plan. This is what's happening. And I was pleasantly surprised. I mean, I wasn't shocked. It's not like I felt like this came out of nowhere, because we were hearing leading up to the All-Star break from Paxson that we're going to look at some of these younger guys on the roster that haven't gotten a chance to play. So yesterday, speaking to the media, he was essentially just reaffirming that, yes, that's happening. And here's how it's happening. And guys like Rolo and Justin Holiday and Jaren Grant are going to take a back seat, and they're going to be cheerleaders. And we're going to give Nwaba and Felicio a chance to start, and we're going to give Campaign a chance to play backup point guard behind Chris Dunn. That was the plan as Paxson laid it out leading up to the All-Star break. And it's nice to see them following through on that, because just me personally sitting here, that's what I wanted to happen. As we enter these final 25 games and you say, all right, well, the Bulls are the eighth team of the eight bad teams trying to secure themselves the best percentage chance at a top five pick, a top three pick, number one overall pick. And it seems like a lot of people are saying, like it's already too late. We screwed up the tank. The Bulls, you know, are the best of those bad teams because they have 20 wins. But I'm sorry, there are a whole bunch of teams there with 18 wins and a couple with 19. And there are 25 left to play. Like, the Bulls can absolutely still climb themselves higher to the top of that tankathon ladder. And Paxson, you can call it what you want. You can call it tanking. You can call it young player evaluation. And, you know, I've talked in recent episodes about how essentially they're the same thing. And it just sounds nicer for Paxson to say, we're going to take a look at some of these young guys. But absolutely, removing Lopez and Holiday and inserting Nwaba and Felicio and certainly Campaign will probably lead to more losses, or at least a better likelihood of a loss on any given night. Especially considering the Bulls, of all of these eight top tanking teams, have the easiest strength of schedule remaining. Nobody in this tank right now in the NBA has an easier schedule than the Bulls for the rest of the way out. You think about the fact that the Bulls play the Brooklyn Nets three more times, Detroit three times, Charlotte twice, Memphis twice, Dallas once, Knicks once, Atlanta once, Orlando once. Yeah, guess what? The Bulls collectively are 12-0 against those teams already.
Unreal. Absolutely unreal.
If the Bulls want to actually make an effort to get themselves, you know, the number three or four pick as opposed to the number seven or eight pick, that's still on the table. And everything Paxson told us yesterday was transparent in a way that was just, we're tanking, but this is why we're tanking. You want to get a look at Campaign? Great, go ahead. You want to give Felicio an opportunity to rectify his ugly season thus far? Great, go ahead. If it leads to more losses, that's also good.
Yeah, and I'm like looking at the Bulls' schedule too, and I'm glad you brought those games up, because there are some tough games in here too that I, without a doubt, will hope that John Paxson and Fred Hoiberg play this block scheduling game to their advantage, especially. Like, when you're going up against nights where you know you're probably going to go into that game and lose, like, I'm just looking, even in the next 3 weeks, the Bulls have to play the Timberwolves, the Bulls have to play the Celtics, and they have to play the Clippers, and they also have to play the Cavaliers, and they have to play the Nuggets ending up towards the back half of March in the last few weeks. So some of these games I figure are going to be sure losses. But the ones that scare me are like the ones that you were talking about, the Mavericks, the Nets, the Hornets, and even the Grizzlies and the Hawks. Like, the Bulls out of that schedule, it's obvious now, because John Paxson being so transparent about this knows, like, looking ahead at the schedule, he's like, if we run guys out there, if we run Justin Holiday and Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen and Robin Lopez, and we run those guys out there 30 minutes a night, we're probably going to win more of these games than we would like to. And that's no brain buster or anything for any Bulls fan who's been watching this team this entire year. So I'm okay with it. And I'm actually kind of shocked that Fred Hoiberg's all right with this. For Fred Hoiberg, though, like, it kind of makes sense for him too. It's like, why wouldn't you want to spend the next 25 games, figure out what you have as far as at the back half of this bench, figure out what's here, what's going to be here for next year, and build upon that. And at that same time, put yourself in a better position where you could potentially get a guy that could change your franchise around any young talent that's only 19 years old in the draft this summer. So I just wonder what this is going to do for the veterans. How are the veterans going to take this? It seems like John Paxson has high confidence that this is going to work out, that this team in particular has a very good meshing group together, and that the veterans mesh with the young guys well, and there's no animosity. Obviously, every player has their, they have their bragging rights. They have their pride to play for too. So at the same sense, guys don't like obviously getting minutes taken away from them. But I feel like if they understand the long-term goal and where the Chicago Bulls sit as a franchise, it's a little bit more understanding. So I like the fact that he actually said that John Paxson said that these guys mesh well, and he doesn't feel like this is going to be too big of a problem going forward.
Yeah. And I think, and this is something that Paxson noted yesterday. He said, having played, I was out of the rotation several times. I know what it's like to be asked to take a lesser role. That happened for Paxson towards the tail end of his time in Chicago. Like, he got benched in favor of BJ Armstrong as a veteran, a proud veteran. You mentioned the pride, and I think absolutely Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday are prideful veterans, but they are also guys who know what the Bulls are doing. They understand that this is a business, and one of the reasons the Bulls decided not to trade away either of those guys to take on a bad contract at the deadline is because they didn't hear any great offers, but also, perhaps just as importantly, they really value the leadership of those two guys. And yeah, it'll probably be hard for those two vets to not be playing down the stretch this season, but Lopez has another year on his deal next season. Holiday is a guy that the Bulls, considering his cheap contract, might be able to trade, you know, leading up to the draft. Who knows? They'll probably both have a new spot and a fresh start somewhere next season, perhaps at the beginning of next season or halfway through next season. They're not going to be around long term. And they get it. They've been around the league and they understand what the Bulls are trying to do right now. It's unfortunate for them. It sucks. You know, they've been good teammates. They've been good locker room guys, but I have no doubt that they will continue to do that now that they are being asked to make way for some young guys that the team needs to evaluate. That's just the matter of the facts of the business.
All right. So let's get to our mailbag segment, considering we already touched on all of those. Obviously you got the 76ers on Thursday night coming back off the All-Star break. I'll say one last thing too, before we get to mailbag, is I know we've ripped on Cameron Payne a ton, and rightfully so, and a lot of us are in consensus that he can't play basketball, but is it weird for me to say that I'm a little bit excited to see what he can do in these 25 games, just a little bit, just considering the sample size that we got of him last year was basically nothing, and he was out of shape. He wasn't anywhere near a player that should have been drafted in the lottery. Is it bad for me to say that I have a little bit of excitement just because of the unknown that's there? And it could turn out to just be a complete disaster and exactly what we all thought, but is it unfair, or should I be scolded because I have this little bit of excitement because there is an unknown with Cameron Payne?
No, I don't think you should be criticized for having a little bit of excitement to see, but I mean, I wouldn't call it excitement. I would, for myself personally, I would call it morbid curiosity. That's what I would call it. I too am looking forward to see what campaign does serving as the primary backup point guard on this team for the final 25 games, because I am morbidly curious. As you said, we didn't really get a big look at him last season because the Bulls were actually trying to make the playoffs, and Hoiberg, you know, threw him into the rotation for a handful of games and found out that it wasn't working, that he still was not in great shape, and then gave him the quick hook. So regardless of what campaign does on the floor in the first five or so games of this remaining 25, he's not going to get the quick hook. If Paxson sticks to his guns and sticks to his word, regardless of how good or bad campaign is going to play. So yeah, I'm kind of curious to see what the hell that looks like, just like you.
All right, so mailbag time to answer all of your questions. I know it's feels like it's been an eternity since the Bulls played their last game. It's only been about a week. But we definitely have some questions to answer here. A lot going along the lines of where these 25 games are going to lead us, kind of what the rotations are going to look like. So I'll start it off, Matt, with a question coming from Tyle Fulford. He says, can you guys go into detail on what Felicio starting at center means for the Bulls? Will he be a double-double kind of guy? Will he be a rim protector? Or do you see him doing significantly less? Matt, I'll let you go first.
Well, I guess this depends somewhat on how many minutes Felicio will play. I mean, just because he's starting doesn't necessarily mean he's going to play 30, 35 minutes a night. Might, you know, there's a chance that at least some nights he will play that much. Even so, I think anticipating Felicio being a consistent double-double guy is a bit much. I mean, we heard that he was not really in that great a shape coming into this season. He clearly, conditioning is going to be an issue because he hasn't been playing much at all this season. And to me, a double-double seems very unlikely. I mean, hopefully you will see him start to get some of his wind back. Hopefully you will see some of that rim protector ability, and not just that, but the footwork on the defensive end as well, which we did see glimpses of over the past couple of years with Felicio in a Bulls uniform. And I'm also curious to see how, if at all, Hoiberg will try to implement plays for Felicio on the offensive end. Because I think we all know that Felicio offensively is a bit limited thus far in his NBA career. The most successful element to his offensive game was the pick and roll and the rolling to the rim kind of stuff that he did with both Rondo and Dwayne Wade last season. And that's really not what this Bulls offense is doing this season. So what can Fred Hoiberg do to find looks for Felicio on the offensive end to make him a useful, efficient piece of this offense, particularly as a member of the starting five when he's going to be playing with the likes of Dunn and LaVine and Markkanen? Clearly, Felicio is not going to be the focal point of the offense playing with those three guys. But what, if anything, can you do? That being said, no, I don't think Felicio will be a double-double guy. I think it'll be less significant than that.
Yeah, I think I'm in agreement with you here. For Felicio, I think the important thing is going to be running the floor is going to be huge for him. Obviously, we talked about the Bulls' problems with him coming into camp. Not exactly in the best shape, but being kind of thrown into the mix and being given minutes here and there across the season and then going to the G League. And he was pretty decent in the G League. Like when he was getting sent down and being able to get more work down there, obviously it's a huge leap between the G League and the NBA, but we got good stuff out of him last year when he played. And that's why he got his $8 million for the next four seasons. So for Felicio, I think it's going to be running the floor, doing the little things that are going to help guys like Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, and Lauri Markkanen. I'm going to be interested to see how he plays alongside Lauri Markkanen and what those two can do together. I don't think that Felicio is complete garbage right now. I would like to see maybe Zach LaVine or Chris Dunn find some type of spark to play with him. I know that you talked about Rondo and Dwayne Wade specifically being a really good piece for Felicio last year. I would hope that maybe there is some chemistry in these last 25 games, or maybe even with campaign. If campaign's thrown out there, who knows? Those two played together in the G League for a few games down a couple months ago. But sort of looking at what Felicio can do on the floor, I think it's going to be doing the little things, sort of being that guy that can grab a bunch of rebounds. I don't think he's going to be this huge scoring threat. Just like we said, there's a lot of other guys that I think the Bulls want to see taking shots. So for Felicio, it's going to be doing a lot of the little things, considering himself to be a guy that they can actually legitimately have in a rotation. I think that's where the bar should be set for Felicio in terms of what we're looking for him over the next year or two. He's never going to be a starter in this league. Like this opportunity for Felicio to play is the opportunity to see if he'll actually be a rotational player with the contract and the sizable contract that he was given for the next 3-4 years. So this is going to be an opportunity for the Bulls not only to get a look at him, but get a look at to see if he is a legitimate piece that they can use in a rotation going into the future.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be nice to see Felicio make some kind of positive strides and positive impact this season to maybe give the Bulls front office a little bit of hope that he was in fact worth that contract to be, if not a starting center, a backup center on a team that's trying to get back towards being competitive. But I think for the most part, Felicio being out there for a big chunk of minutes for the remaining 25 games will be one of the things that helps this tank the most. That's what I think.
Yeah.
All right, let's go ahead.
One more thing really quick on Cristiano Felicio too. When we were talking about him last week in his story, and we were just kind of reading some of the Fred Hoiberg quotes about Felicio, I think Fred Hoiberg still has confidence and likes Cristiano Felicio. He talks specifically about how well he moves his feet for a big man. And I think that's funny because a lot of people say that about Lauri Markkanen as well. And now you have two guys playing in the front court that have unbelievable footwork in terms of big men. I'm curious to see how that plays out, especially in long, elongated minutes. If Cristiano Felicio is going to be out there for 20, 25 minutes a night in that rotation. And even if they play him alongside Bobby Portis, I don't know how often that's going to happen. Or even if Noah Vonleh gets a run out there too. I'll be interested to see, though, more so with Lauri Markkanen and Cristiano Felicio, with having strong footwork for big men, how that'll play out to underneath the basket. So it'll be interesting.
Definitely. All right, let's move on. And I'll toss this one up to you, Jordan. I'm actually going to kind of blend two questions here because they're very much so connected. So this one comes to us via email from Chris, who says, what are the odds that this lineup change is the direct result of Garpak's whispering in Hoiberg's ear what exactly to do? Is it possible Hoiberg is buying in on the tank himself? And then on Twitter, Jay Butler asks, what is Hoiberg's job status moving forward? His offense looks fluid when executed, but his record is what it is. So, Jordan, I'll let you go first on that. What exactly are your thoughts about who made this decision as far as the Bulls rotation and what Hoiberg's job security and job status is moving forward?
So I think we've talked about this, I think a few weeks ago, not only about Fred Hoiberg and whether or not he's going to stay. And I think I said this on, I was asked a couple different times when I've gone on other shows, I've gone on other podcasts, radio shows. People always are curious about Fred Hoiberg's job status and whether or not he's going to be the coach for the Bulls in the future. I think you throw the record completely out the window. And this is really, I feel like for Fred Hoiberg, this is year one. Year one in the sense of he's getting to actually do what he was built as far as an NBA and what he was successful to do in college. This is really year one for him. The biggest mark I have for Fred Hoiberg, and I like a lot of things, and I think my tone has changed a ton this season. I feel like the same thing for you, Matt. But the tone has changed on Fred Hoiberg, but... Yeah. Between that and the biggest mark I think I have against Hoiberg right now is the way he dealt with stars. And I've said it before, and when the Bulls are at that point where they're ready to be competitive and throw a ton of cash and a potential superstar that could come in with a big ego, I'm a little bit nervous to figure out how that's going to work with Fred Hoiberg, because that seems like the one big weakness. Obviously with Butler, Rondo, and Wade, especially with Butler, there was that fractioning relationship there. So that's my biggest question mark with Fred Hoiberg. I think I have confidence in him, just what he was able to do with Lauri Markkanen and Chris Dunn this season, the development that we've seen with those guys. And even with Bobby Portis and Denzel Valentine taking a step forward this season, it's all good things for Fred Hoiberg. But as far as like the Garpak's whispering in Hoiberg's ear, I don't think that's any secret. Like John Paxson came out and said, like we had just talked about in the beginning of the episode, this is what the plan is. This is what we're going to do. So I feel like it wasn't really them telling Hoiberg what to do, more so than maybe them all sitting down, Gar Foreman, John Paxson, Doug Collins, some of the assistant coaches, and Fred Hoiberg, and all kind of discussing this and see what the avenue is and what's the best route with these 25 games left. So, yeah, it is Garpak's wanting them to be in the best possible situation for the draft. But I also think at the same time, it's them telling him, you know what, Fred, your job's secure right now. Let's go forward with this plan. Let's see what these young guys have that we haven't given them enough run to. If we end up losing a ton of games throughout the end of the stretch of the season, hey, we might have a better chance at getting a top five pick. So it should all work out. Fred's job, he should sit back and say that, you know what, my job is secure right now. I did a good job this year. Don't rest on those laurels, but at the same time, you don't have to press like he has been over the last 2 months or so.
Yeah, no, I mean, like the idea that there was some kind of roundtable discussion here between Hoiberg and those above him in this Bulls organization as far as like, well, here's what we think. What do you think, Fred? No, that's you know, that's ridiculous. That's hilarious.
How was that ridiculous, though?
No, I mean, like, maybe it was they all sat in a room together and said, okay, here's what's happening. But there, it's not like if Fred Hoiberg would have said in that meeting, I object. I'd rather continue playing Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday. That Paxton would be like, okay, well, okay, you know what? You do that. You do that instead. No, Hoiberg right. is the employee. Paxton is the boss. You know, the Reinsdorfs are off doing whatever the hell they're doing. But in this situation, 100%, there is no confusing this, and all Bulls fans should be clear on this across the board. Paxton instructed Hoiberg to bench Lopez and Holiday and Grant and play Nwaba and Felicio and Payne. And Hoiberg, good old Mr. Ned Flanders, looked at Paxton and said, Oakley Dokley, sir, yes, sir. That's what happened. But it's not like Hoiberg is doing this begrudgingly. He's okay with it. He understands what they're doing. Literally, direct quote from Hoiberg yesterday after Paxton spoke. I understand where we are right now as an organization. Boom. Everybody gets it. But it was absolutely, without a doubt, Paxton giving a command and Hoiberg following that command.
See, I feel different about that. I can't believe that it would be. I see, like, to me, I feel like what the Bulls were trying to do in terms of like the connection with the coach, the culture and the personality and the connection that they're trying to have and the good communication skills. So that's why, like, I don't think it's crazy to say that these all five, six of these guys that have power to mess with these rotations and to say who's playing and who's not. I don't think it's crazy to think that they all sat down and were trying to figure out what the goal is for the rest of the season, more so than it just being like John Paxton pushing his way through Fred Hoiberg's office. You're playing Felicio now. You're playing Cameron Payne now. This is it. That's all that's happening.
It's we're not getting like tanked. He came barging in and was like, you know, throwing Nerf balls at Hoiberg while yelling. I mean, no, I'm not trying to like, you know, paint a scene that aggressive. I'm just saying when you break it down to the bare bones, that's what happened. This is not a roundtable discussion with Hoiberg saying, here's what I think. And the Bulls front office saying, all right, well, maybe we'll consider that. No, I'm sorry. Paxton is the boss. Hoiberg is the employee. And the employee is going to follow the instructions of the boss. This is not a collective hive mind of what do we all think we should do for the last 25 games. Paxton has an idea for what to do and told Hoiberg that's what's happening. And they're going to do it because Hoiberg is a yes man and he understands what they're trying to do and he's okay with it.
But do you think Fred Hoiberg went into like, do you think Fred Hoiberg had any reservation about not playing some of these guys, like saying, oh no, I want to keep Robin Lopez, Justin Holiday out there for 35 minutes a night and keep running those guys out there? Or I see, like, to me, I feel like there is some mutual ground here where Paxton didn't have to give Fred Hoiberg a command. And I know we said this like about a month ago when we were saying, well, will Fred Hoiberg be all right with the idea that understanding that this is like, you don't have to press for wins. Like, that's not what this is about. And I feel like Fred Hoiberg probably more so was like on the same page as everybody else in that area and saying that, you know what? Yeah, it's probably going to benefit me if I get a top five player rather than being at the back half of the lottery. And at the same time, I can kind of figure out these guys that have been hanging on the end of the bench that I've had no decisions for. Get some run out there and I can at least take a look at him. I don't think it's like more so there was any pushback from Fred Hoiberg. I feel like that for once in a while that this Bulls coaching, like, and it could be obviously Fred Hoiberg too, his personality is just kind of like a pushover, a yes man, like you had said, but I feel like there's gotta be some clarity. There's gotta be some parallel thoughts here, not only with Fred Hoiberg, but what John Paxton and Gar Forman are trying to do with this team from a front office standpoint. And I feel like Fred Hoiberg didn't really need to be commanded to be saying this, but it's more so of, okay, how are we going to spin this? How are we going to play this to our veterans and the players that I have to see every day? Because that's another big factor to it is like John Paxton and Gar Forman don't have to see these guys, don't have to see the players every single day. Fred Hoiberg has to do it. So he's got to be the one to explain to the veterans, hey, this is what we're doing. This is the path that we're taking, and he's got to deal with that for the rest of the 25 games, the 2 months that are left of the season. So I think there's a parallel. I didn't think that there was really need for a command from John Paxson or Gar Forman.
Well, and, you know, obviously that's another opportunity for Fred Hoiberg to handle a difficult coaching situation better than he has in the past. Example, telling Joe Keem he wasn't going to be a starter anymore. He did not handle that very well. Now he has to tell some veterans who he likes, who are good for his locker room, that they're not going to be playing. So how does Fred handle that? That's a test. And that's something that Paxson can evaluate Hoiberg on as they move forward and hopefully continue to build strong relationships throughout this organization. And look, I was merely just trying to make the clarification between, you know, this is not a democracy and this is not a let's all give our input. And I'm not saying that necessarily there was any pushback from Fred as far as the instructions, because I said, and Hoiberg said himself yesterday, I understand where we are as an organization. He's not an idiot. He gets it. But it is not a democracy. And if the question is, you know, was it Gar and Pax whispering into Hoiberg's ear, you know, whatever you want to call it, whispering, shouting, no, it doesn't matter. The point that matters is this was not a democratic decision. Paxson told Hoiberg what to do, and Hoiberg said, okay. That's all I'm saying.
See, I think this is where we differ, because I don't fully believe that this is that I think this is like in part of change. It has to be a democracy in terms of like the way that coaches communicate with the front office. There obviously has to be a great relationship there. And I feel like in order to run a team or anything in general,
why do you think
like,
they got rid of Tom Thibodeau?
Because they didn't in have their a relationship. Tom Thibodeau did what he wanted.
Because Tom Thibodeau wanted to do what he wanted, or at least have more of a say in the day-to-day decisions, and wanted the front office to stay out of it. One of the main reasons they hired Fred Hoiberg is because, you know, they called it positive communication, whatever, subtext. They knew that Hoiberg would do what they wanted him to do.
I get that from that standpoint, but Tom Thibodeau, like, He had no room to budge. He didn't care about what the front office had to say. Like, that's completely different. That's why I'm saying, like, that relationship obviously didn't work, because neither side wanted to listen to either one of each other. Like,
yeah, and in this situation, Fred Hoiberg is listening to and obeying the instructions of John Paxson.
See, I don't agree with that. Like, I don't agree that this is like some type of dog trainer, like, like John Paxson and Gar Forman are the dog handlers, and all of a sudden Fred Hoiberg is the dog, and
I'm not trying to emasculate Fred Hoiberg here, Jordan.
No, I know.
I'm just saying one is the boss and one is the employee, and the boss told the employee what to do, and the employee is following orders. It's that simple.
I think it's more complicated than that. I think you're not giving Fred Hoiberg enough credit to his input as far as what the front office sees. And the communication that's there, like, why can't a front office have a round table of people that have been evaluating talent, not only the coach that has been there every single day, but also the front offices have been watching games when they were at home or paying attention to the team. Doug Collins is obviously there to be a consultant too. So like, why couldn't there be an open discussion about this and all of them come together without even John Paxson having to say, like, these guys are the ones I want you to play. That's it. That's all that's happening. Like, why couldn't it have been like, okay, this is where our vision is. This is where our goal is. How do you feel about this, Fred Hoiberg? Well, we don't know. Like, Fred Hoiberg could have turned around and said, you know what? This is probably a good idea for us for the last 25 games. Hey, we're all on the same page. We're all making agreements to get the veterans to take a step back in their role on this team and see what we got with these young guys. I don't feel like it was like this command that the front office had to give Fred Hoiberg and tell him, you know what? You have to play these guys right now. And Fred had any pushback to that. Like, I feel like they're all on the same page for once in a really long time. And that's where I feel like that, like, an open discussion in a round table, like, not a physical round table or anything, but an open discussion, at least to say that we're all on the same page, rather than sending those veterans out there playing 35 minutes a night. Like, I feel like we're saying the same thing, but just the way it was put out there, I feel like we have different views of what the communication style is.
Yeah. We have different views. I believe that John Paxson is Fred Hoiberg's boss, and you don't, apparently.
No. Oh my God. No. Like, I get it. Like, the boss part is like, I get that. But at the same time, like, it's this is Fred Hoiberg. Like, this is John Paxson's franchise. Like, he is running the franchise. But at the same time, this is Fred Hoiberg's team. He's around the team every single day. Like, as much as you want to say John Paxson knows what's best to do for this organization, like, Fred Hoiberg knows what's best out of and what's he's going to get out of any of these players that John Paxson's telling him to play. Like, I think the biggest key of all of this is the front office telling Fred Hoiberg, slow your roll. You don't have anything to worry about. You don't need to be stacking up wins. I think we can allow these players to play and get us ourselves into a better position for this summer. See what we have in evaluating with this talent. I don't think Fred Hoiberg, I feel like maybe Fred Hoiberg is saying, you know what? All right, I don't have to press for wins and feel like my job's on the line at any time here. Now we can go ahead with this plan. This is what I originally wanted to do. Like, I just feel like that there is open communication that didn't happen with Tom Thibodeau and what we talked about, and that any organization that wants to be successful, you have to have a good line of communication between the front office and the head coach. And you can't just say that the front office is just going to throw a bunch of things that they want and command for Fred Hoiberg to do and say that's like okay with Fred Hoiberg. That's not how you can.
That's exactly what happened.
How does that end up being better for the franchise overall, though, 2-3 years down the road when you just have the bosses sitting up there telling you what to do every single time? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. And like, well, all right, then John Paxson, you come down and coach the team then. Like, that's like what basically what you're saying, like that John Paxson could take over Fred Hoiberg's job. And
no, that's not what I'm saying.
That's how I feel, though. That's like, okay, so explain it in terms of why they can't have an open communication, that why Fred Hoiberg can't have the same vision.
I never said anything about the fact that they can't have an open communication. One of them is in a position of power, and that one, John Paxson, gave Hoiberg instructions about who to play down the stretch. I don't understand why, like, you're getting twisted up in knots about the intricacies and specifics of whether or not Hoiberg got to like voice his opinion. Yeah,
because I think that's important.
Hoiberg probably gave his input when he was approached by Paxson about here's the game plan moving forward. And Hoiberg said yesterday, I understand where we are as an organization. I don't know how many times I have to say that. They're all clearly on the same page, and the relationship between coach and front office is healthy and strong right now. And I believe that. And I believe what you said, as far as Hoiberg's job security, you don't need to worry about that. They believe in him, and they're going to let him see this out through this contract. I believe that's what's happening. But there's no discrepancy. There is no way that you can make an argument against the fact that this was Paxson's idea. And he told Fred that this is what they're doing. And Fred said, I get it. Okay. That is command from boss and following through on the instructions from employee, something that Tom Thibodeau never wanted to do. So yeah, that relationship with Fred is better with the front office than the previous coach who sat in his chair, but it's still a boss giving instructions, employee following orders. That's what it is.
I think it's more complicated than that, but I think we can sit and rest on this to agree to disagree with this question.
Yeah, fair enough.
Stop yelling at me!
All right, let's get to another question here as we kind of wrap up. So this one's pretty interesting. This one comes via email from Paven. He said, what do you make of David Nwaba getting inserted into the starting lineup? Don Nwaba backcourt has been great defensively and has great defensive potential, and Nwaba played well in the starting lineup prior to his ankle injury. Should there be some fear that more minutes for Nwaba may equal more wins, or should we look at it as a chance for Nwaba to be part of the belonging with the Bulls core of Markkanen, LaVine, and Dunn?
This one's interesting. I like the fact that Nwaba's going to get some starts. You and I have talked a lot on this show about wanting to see more from Nwaba after he had played really well for a stretch, and then when LaVine came back and the rotation got a little jumbled, he lost some minutes and was kind of in a bit of a slump. I love the idea of a Dunn Nwaba backcourt, because as Pavon said, like, that's a great defensive pairing for your backcourt. The idea of having Nwaba get the chance to play with that trio of Dunn, LaVine, and Markkanen, like, you know, Dunn at the one, Nwaba at the two, put Zach at the three with Markkanen at the four. obviously now you got, you know, throw Felicio into the five and that'll be your starting lineup. So, you know, the five is where you're not in love with that lineup, but having Dunn and Nwaba play together in that backcourt, and then also having the offensive weapons of LaVine and Markkanen on the floor with him, Nwaba might not be a great offensive weapon, but what he can do really well is run the floor. And at this point in his career, he's not a great floor spacer, really reluctant to shoot that three-point shot, but he can get out and run the floor. And that's what Hoiberg's going to want to do the most with this starting unit for the remainder of the season, because we haven't seen much of the Dunn, LaVine, Markkanen combo. There was only a few games between LaVine coming back and Dunn getting hurt. So he's going to do as much as he can to get that unit to get out and run. And I think Nwaba will help with that. As far as should there be a fear about more Nwaba minutes, meaning more wins? I mean, in the grand scheme, no, I don't think so. I think it's not. He's a good player. He's a good young prospect that I really want to see the Bulls give more of a chance to. And I'm glad that he's going to get his shot at the starting lineup in March and April. But fearing more wins because of more minutes for Nwaba? No, I don't think so.
Yeah, just to kind of put some numbers behind this too real quick, just to throw this out for you. So some advanced analytics here of Chris Dunn and David Nwaba playing in a two-man lineup for the Bulls. So they played 29 games together, 279 minutes. So that's a pretty sizable chunk of time. The offensive rating for these two guys when they're on the floor together, 103.8. Their defensive rating is actually 102.4. It's a little bit lower than I actually expected. The net rating, 1.4. Their assist percentage is 53%. Assist to turnover ratio is 1.36. That's not very good. It's all right, but not that great. I'm looking at some of these totals too, just as far as pace goes. 103.82. The pace is pretty quick. As far as their true shooting percentage is pretty nice to combine between the two guys. So obviously they're going to have a little bit of an offensive firepower, but I thought the interesting thing with Nwaba is the player that he plays best with is actually Bobby Portis. Like, I'm looking at Bobby Portis and David Nwaba's numbers, which they've played 36 games together. Obviously they have almost double the minutes playing together than, Chris Dunn and David Nwaba have. So this is what their advanced analytics say about both of these guys. So offensive rating 110.2 and their defensive rating is 103.2. So I just think just from looking at offensive defensive rating in like net rating overall, which is at a 7, that's pretty good for Nwaba and Bobby Portis on the floor at the same time. So I'm interested to see how he plays in giving his starter role. I don't know if I'm ready to say that David Nwaba could potentially take that next step and be like a critical potential starter. I don't think that's it. I think they're more so looking at him as being like a legitimate piece coming off the bench that could maybe play alongside Bobby Portis and Denzel Valentine. They already have seen what that can do with him coming off the bench with those guys, but just getting more production, more, I guess, views of what David Nwaba can do in extended minutes. So I don't know if I'm really excited or crazy about it being a possibility that Chris Dunn and David Nwaba are all of a sudden going to light the world on fire together. But I definitely think it's going to be great for David Nwaba and great for the Bulls and Bulls fans to really see and get an idea of who David Nwaba is and what, and for the Bulls too. Like, we have to think about this. David Nwaba is only on a 1-year contract. So next year, like this offseason, I feel like he's going to be one of those guys that teams are going to be interested in. Like, you don't need to have a ton of money to sign this guy. So I think that's somebody that the Bulls want to make sure that if they end up having to overpay to keep David Nwaba, that they're making sure that this guy is going to be a part of this core for the future. Because along with Zach LaVine, he's another guy that I think the Bulls need to make sure is on a top priority to bring back next year.
Yeah, I think Bulls fans were all pleasantly surprised when Nwaba burst onto the scene and was making impact plays on both ends of the floor. And like you said, I mean, to say that he can hold on to that starter spot going into next season, if the Bulls do in fact keep him, you know, obviously it depends on what kind of moves the Bulls make in the offseason and who they draft. But I wouldn't go that far. I definitely think he has the potential to be a solid role player coming off the bench, like you said. But in the meantime, for these final 25 games, if he's going to get the start most of the nights, what I said previously, I'll just, you know, restate that for emphasis. I am very excited to see the prospective offensive pace of a Fred Hoiberg offense with not only Nwaba, but Felicio inserted into the starting lineup. Because Felicio can, we have seen, run the floor. For a big man, he runs the floor very well. So obviously it'll take him a little bit of time to get his legs back under him because he hasn't been playing that much. But when Felicio gets himself into game shape, and that starting five of Dunn, Nwaba, Levine, Markkanen, and Felicio are all pushing the pace together in Fred's offense, that is going to be something really fun for Bulls fans.
So I think that's going to about do it here for our mailbag segment. Just before we get out of here, I just want to give a quick update on the tank and the importance of not only the last 25 games, but I think the next 2 weeks are really important for the Bulls. So the Bulls only sit 3 games back from the worst record in the league at 20-37. Phoenix has it at 18-41. Phoenix has lost 7 straight. You have other teams like Brooklyn who've lost 7 straight. Memphis has lost 7 straight. New York is also surging to try and, I don't know, end up somewhere between 5-8. They've lost 8 in a row as well. So I'm looking at these teams and it's going to be important for the Bulls to, and I think this is why this decision was made. Obviously, we were expecting something after the All-Star break, but you just look at the teams that the Bulls have to play over the next 2 weeks. You got the 76ers, the Timberwolves, the Nets, the Hornets, the Mavericks, the Celtics, Memphis, Detroit, and then you have the Hawks. So you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 teams that are in this lottery, 4 of which are ahead of you. So I think that this is going to be a block situation where we're going to see a ton of Cristiano Felicio, a ton of Cameron Payne, a ton of David Nwaba, and some of these other guys that have gotten no run, maybe some Noah Vonleh in there too as well. But I think this more secures the fact that Bulls will be losing more games over these 2 or 3 week stretch to sort of put themselves back into that contention of maybe pushing themselves into the top 5 of these tanking teams.
Yeah, as I said when we began this episode, it is far from over. The Bulls are outside looking in right now when it comes to this draft lottery, but it only will take a couple oops accident wins from the teams that have 18-19 right now and a significant losing streak from Chicago, and I mean, they're right back in it. So it's certainly doable. I think the lineup changes will definitely help in that regard. The one worry you have is that Bulls' strength of schedule is so weak down the stretch, and they're playing a lot of teams that they have already beaten this season. And we'll certainly go into that game, regardless of who's in the starting five and who Fred is using. The Bulls will have the confidence that they can go in and win that game. And again, something to keep in mind through everything we've discussed in today's episode, as far as Paxson and Hoiberg being on the same page, and this is where we're going, and it's about player evaluation, and we're expecting to steer towards the tank as fans. Hoiberg also said that his approach as a coach and the approach of his players has not changed, and that they're going to go out there every night and try to put the best foot forward to put a game plan together to give themselves a chance to win. So the lineup and the rotation might be changing, but Hoiberg and his players are still going to go out there and try to win basketball games every night. You can be sure of that.
Last thing, this, as far as Bulls fans go and as far as this podcast go, for the next 25 games, we are going to be the biggest Utah Jazz and the biggest LA Clippers fans too as well, because we want New Orleans to be knocked out of the playoffs. That would be the ultimate get for Bulls fans. So continue keeping your eyes on the LA Clippers and also the Utah Jazz, because they're right now, I mean, the Utah Jazz have won 11 in a row. 11
in a row, baby.
So if anything else, if you can't bear watching Bulls games heading into the last 25 games, flip on some Utah Jazz games, flip on the Clippers games, become big fans of them for the last 25 games, because you want New Orleans to miss the playoffs. And that would mean the Bulls would get a second lottery pick coming up in the 2018 draft. So just something to keep in mind as we head into the last 25 games of this season.
Let's do this, tank, baby.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on social media at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck. and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. I know we said we were going to have David Haugh on today. We're doing that interview later on today, so that episode will be out on Thursday morning for you. So we'll have a great conversation, great talk with David Haugh of the Chicago Tribune. Remember, we're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time on the Nothing But Net channel. Remember to make sure that you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. But for Jordan and Matt, we are out. Have a great night.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.